talk to us now and go to the TNT Radio Interactive Live chat room at tntradio.live. Lighting the fuse for freedom. Today's News Talk Radio, TNT. Patrick Henningsen and TNT.
All right, folks. All right. Welcome. Welcome to this live broadcast. It's great to have you with us on this amazing Monday. I'm Patrick Henningsen, your host. You're listening to the Patrick Henningsen Show here on TNT, today's news talk. And we are very pleased to be joined in studio by a very special guest. You probably recognize him in his voice because he has been a guest remotely on the show, but we're in studio today with Freddy Ponton, French journalist, independent researcher. Hello, Freddie. How you doing?
I'm very good, Patrick. It's great to be here with you, and good to have you in France for another few days. So yeah, fantastic. Really, really, really happy to have you around with us.
No, that's our pleasure. And we're working on, obviously, doing our normal journalistic work. And Freddie's got some great research that you previewed some of in previous segments on this show. Obviously, we've been doing a lot of work over the last couple of days on this and other projects. So it's great. And, you know, we rely on our journalistic colleagues to collaborate, to come together, to try to, these are very complex stories, and the work that we do is very complicated. So it means a lot to myself. I can speak from personal experience. It means a lot to be able to collaborate and combine and help to get organized and put some of this stuff into perspective, because it can be daunting, the size of it.
Yes, absolutely, Patrick. It's a big story, and I think they all merge together. You know, if you look at the rollout of these vaccines, you look at Ukraine, you look at the various kind of geopolitics movements that are taking place on the chessboard. We can see the patterns, and somehow they all kind of interlace with each other. So it's very interesting. Whether you're geopoliticians or whether you're just simply a journalist investigating certain aspects of the crisis, because we basically been offered with so many crises, so we have to be on all fronts at the same time. And that's not always easy if you don't have the resources to do that. If you don't have a team and, you know, researchers going to work with you, it takes time. And better, I think that I feel sometimes a little bit isolated in France, you know, but because some of the research that especially with regards to COVID-19 had to be done in the United States first, but we coming to an end to that. We've got the evidence, we got the information that we wanted, so we feel comfortable now with what we have in the US. And then it's time for us now to move towards, you know, the European Union, European Commission, and it's really looking at how these guys were set up, you know, according to what we found out in the US, and trying to understand who are the collaborators, who are perhaps the co-conspirators, you know. So that's a really interesting time.
So it's a bit like follow the mystery, follow the money. And right now, so the money is tracking back, and the next potential crisis or moves are kind of pointing in the direction of Europe, really. So I think that's that's one thing that you're certainly concerned about.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, we have the World Economic Forum in our backyard, you know, so obviously, and taking into consideration what Klaus Schwab said about having all these people, you know, in different ministerial cabinets, you know, whether it's in Canada, in France, and so on. So it's obviously worrying to see how much influence and obviously his sponsors have over our policies and so on. So we're looking into that. But right now, really, the focus is about, you know, looking at how nations reacted to COVID-19 and how easy it was for them to relinquish their power to the European Commissions. And that's really, really set the stage for what's to come over the next few years. You know, less power, less sovereignty, and then having non-elected people starting to make decisions for our country. So it's a very worrying time, but there's a lot of hope, because obviously dear informations are starting to surface. So no, it's good. It's good. 2023 is going to be a very, very interesting year.
Yeah, and we'll talk more about this story in the second hour, because there's a lot to cover, of course. But in terms of this country, in terms of France, there are a number of what I would consider credible independent journalists still around. There's a number of them, people with integrity. There's also some publishers that have a bit of journalistic integrity left. I know it's not like what it was maybe 30 or 40 or 50 years ago, but it's still there. So, you know, so there is a little bit of, let's say, an ethical quarter of the sort of journalistic community in France. It's still there. It's still there. And I know there's a lot of very dedicated researchers as well around the country. So that helps to balance out the mainstream a little bit, but it's nothing near what it should be. It's still very much out of balance. And like in Britain or like in the US, it's candidates weighted heavily in favor of the big mainstream conglomerates. But there, what I'm saying is there is still an independent sector, and it is doing work. It's just obviously the odds are against them. You know, it's tough.
Yes, it is. It is tough. But and of course, in Europe, you know, we are not like a confederation, if you will. So we have all these cultures barrier and then the language barrier as well. So a lot of people are pretty much stuck with the informations, mainstream informations, and the local alternative media, which give them a lot of informations, primarily about France, perhaps Europe sometimes. But if something is happening in the US or in the UK, you know, you're going to want to be able to surf, you know, amongst the various independent journalists, and then everything is in English, you got to translate it. It's a bit more work, and it's less accessible, I think. It's so you this is really what's interesting as far as the work that I do. It's been able to survey what's going on in the US and in the UK, but are also being able to, at some stage to go back in French and do some videos or different kind of inputs in various programs to be able to bring that information, not wait for 6 months or a year before it reaches the public in France. And that's really for the this COVID investigation and the origin of COVID and so on. I think that really I've got something coming for people in February, and that is in French, and that's going to be very interesting. So I'm looking forward to that, to release it, because 2 years of investigation, you want it off your desk, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, that's interesting, the point you're bringing up, and I didn't think about this a lot, but Europe is compartmentalized because of language in so many ways. Like, so it's difficult for people to join together to push back against Brussels, for instance, whereas in America is one language. So you have 50 states, so people can collaborate a lot easier and form research groups and activist groups and kind of joint forces. It's a lot more practical when there's a single language. Mm-hmm. So that's to Brussels' advantage, isn't it? That bureaucracy, they rely on that to keep Europe divided in a way.
Well, it's kind of a hangar. It's a kind of a warehouse for politicians that I've hit a dead end, if you will, whether their political career is on standby or whether their party is not doing great. So they've been 25 years, they've never worked a day in their life. They're pretty much, you know, out there sucking up money. And then when there's no more place in the current administrations, then they're thrown out in Europe, you know, and they'll go out there. They barely attend. They have very little clue about foreign policies, and they're not trained for this kind of role. Yet they're just picking up a fat check. But this is well exposed. I mean, I really have to give credit to the French researching community and independent journalist community. We have some really good journalists, you know, really, really precise. And I've get once in a while the chance to work with them, and we combine our research, but it's kind of rare. But I see what they do, and I observe what they do, and some of them can be proud of the work they do. And I think it's really refreshing to see that the young, you know, generations are coming and say, look, we're interested in what's happening in the world. We have a place, and more importantly, we want to bring France back to the place where it is expected to be, which is, you know, in the big debates about human rights, about democracy, and about, you know, this kind of independent voice around the world when things are falling apart. You know, you need a country that has the weight, that economic, that credibility to come and say, look, you know, we're good in diplomacy. We can obviously get better, but we're not. I mean, look at the diplomacy with Macron and all the team with Ukraine. This is just a disaster. This is really a big diplomacy error from day one. You know, when you're told something is going to happen, you and the UK and the US is telling you these guys are going to war, then you should know they're going to war. Shouldn't kind of doubt it and, you know, go along and plan accordingly. And this wasn't the case. And there was a debacle from day one.
Well, we might touch on Ukraine too. There's quite a few breaking stories today on Ukraine. I know you've been following the headlines as well on that, but we will sort of touch some of those areas. Now, in the we'll take a break in a second. We'll hopefully connect our research assistant for the show, Miles of Truth, who's going to be joining us on the live link from the UK. And we'll see what Miles has to cover. I know there was a mass shooting at Monterey Park, California, in the Los Angeles area. Very strange event, very odd. It seems to have hit the Vietnamese community, or what the Americans would call the Oriental community in Los Angeles. Very strange. And coming at a very odd time where there's a major court case to do with the Second Amendment in America. So obviously the red flag, a few red flags are up as to the potential political leveraging of this high profile tragedy by politicians. And let's be honest, folks, they do it every single time to fast track legislation to ban guns, for instance, ban ammo. We'll see how this story comes out. I think Hesher, Brian McLean's got a great show on this network on TNT. He's probably dissecting that story better than anybody. So you check out the Brian McLean show today and tomorrow and Wednesday. He's probably going to be covering this story pretty well. So anyway, we'll look to him for his guidance on this, because I'm sure he's watching it like a hawk. In the meantime, let's take a break here with TNT Today's News Talk. I'm here with Freddie Ponton in studio, and I am your host, Patrick Henningsen. We'll be right back after these messages.
Brian McLean on TNT Radio.
We got a 2A win right here going on. The U.S. government bump stock ban has been struck down by the court. The U.S. government was wrong when it said a ban on machine guns applied to bump stocks. A federal court ruled on January 6th. See, good things happen on January 6th, too. The move backed by then-President Donald Trump came after a man carried out a mass shooting in Las Vegas. Allegedly, I'm going to throw in allegedly here, using bump stocks to fire more rapidly. But what I want to point out here is that these highly politicized events that get basically sealed, where we don't have access to, you know, the forensic evidence and all of the court evidence, and proper discovery is not done. These things, like the Stephen Paddock incident in Las Vegas 2018, almost all of these things lead to inevitable legislation. And that is not good. That's not good when you've got a government that is writing legislation based on a media narrative when the public has no access to facts.
Hesher on TNT Radio.
Public school is the instituted agency of socialism throughout every community.
The U.S. government has no authority to have any role in education.
We're going to lose our very republic if we don't stop this indoctrination of children in government schools.
What happened to us in China can't happen here.
Have one kind of education and then call it equity.
It's about outcomes. It's about trying to force us all to be equal.
I think we're going to have a race civil war on our hands.
We are exposing kids to pornography as early as kindergarten. Parents just don't know.
No, not anymore. Not anymore. Parents need to wake up. They don't have the interests of your child at heart.
Truth and Lies in American Education at SalemNow.com.
Patrick Henningsen talks on Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Back. I'm your host, Patrick Henningsen. Look, we're going to transition to some interesting stories here, and we're also going to bring on to the call Miles of Truth. He's one of our research assistants for the shows. Normally joins us during this segment, and I think we've got him on the line right now. Hello, Miles. How you doing?
Hi, Patrick. Thanks for having me. I'm very well. Thank you.
It's great to have you, Miles. And look, we're here in studio with Freddie Ponton, French journalist, and we're actually broadcasting from the continent, from La République today and tomorrow. Actually, no, just for today, actually. Miles, over to you. I know you've got a few deep, queries here, seeing that we've got Freddie in the house, but in terms of the sort of mainstream pedestrian headlines, big stories right now breaking, is there anything in particular that you're sort of paying attention to?
Yeah, I have two topics today that I wanted to get into a little bit. The first one is on the topic of sort of zoonotic animal diseases that I know Freddie has written a lot about, the One Health topic.
Okay. Yep.
Which is sort of this approach to, you know, seeing animal and human health as sort of one topic, as well as the health of, you know, everything in the world, really. I don't know, maybe that's not doing it justice, but Freddie, if you want to jump in at any point and correct me or just add to what I'm saying, that's perfectly welcome.
Has anything broke? So you got something breaking to do that touches on that right now?
Well, yes. I've seen several articles in the past week or two regarding the rise of mRNA vaccines and other mRNA products for animals, specifically for animals. It immediately occurred to me that, I mean, let's assume these new mRNA products for animals are as safe and effective as the mRNA COVID shots. Okay, are we going to see animals dropping dead and a wave of heart attacks and strokes and clots? If we do, I mean, this is almost, you know, what the One Health thing was invented for, because we're going to see, you know, crossover or between animal and human sort of the subjects, I guess, like with COVID, where, you know, initially it was said to be from bats and whatever. I mean, all these viruses, a lot of them trace back to animals. Obviously, monkeypox, bird flu, Zika.
Or
there's been so many.
Allegedly traced back to animals.
Right.
That's the story. Yeah.
But I guess my fear is that, you know, these things are being developed. They have been for a number of years now. And I think they're going to start to be given on a more widespread basis from now on. And I guess my fear is that if we do see a lot of adverse effects, that they will try to use the sort of One Health approach to pursue interventions in humans as well, not just in the animal populations. So that is a bit of a speculation on my part, but it seems to fit perfectly with this, with One Health sort of rising up as a sort of approach to health in general, if that makes sense.
Freddie, first explain to us, Miles saying One Health, in a nutshell, explain to us what that concept means. And why have most people not heard about it? Quickly.
Yes. Hi, Mike. One Health is really, when you start to look into it, it goes way back when, and it's really about an integrated, unifying approach to really balance and kind of optimize the health of people, but also, as you mentioned, animals and ecosystems. So it sounds very altruistic in principle, but when you scratch the surface, obviously you look at it as a recipe for policy making when it goes down to any form of crisis or emergency, whether it's a public health emergency, whether it's a climate emergency, or whether it's going to be an animal kind of a safety emergency. So this is what One Health is there to justify, to provide the data that's going to support models, and these models are going to be used for making policies and pushing on whatever they need to push on us.
And then, Miles, did you have a question for Freddie on this one?
Not a question so much, but I would like you to just provide input to add to what I'm saying, if you can. What I'm seeing is, well, there was a piece by Robert Malone published in the last week or two on this topic, where he sort of lists out some of the initiatives towards mRNA technology in animals. And, you know, you'd expect the big drug companies like Merck and Pfizer, they're in there doing their thing. There's other smaller companies as well. BioNTech and Bayer have an alliance to develop these mRNA products for animals. And really, it's somewhat worrying. I mean, as Robert Malone points out in his piece, they're in sort of through the 80s and 90s, we saw people sort of start to demand access to data from human clinical trials. And by the year 2000, they had publicly available database, clinicaltrials.gov for the US, that where you could search all that information, but no such database exists for animal trials. It's relatively secretive in comparison to what goes on with developing human drugs. But like I said, there are all these initiatives now. There's programs, partnerships happening. There's drugs under development. And it looks like, to me, that pretty soon, you know, farm animals, zoo animals, pets, what have you, are going to start getting mRNA vaccines on what could be a widespread basis. I should say I'm, you know, inherently suspicious of these things, and I don't really expect them to do, you know, what they say they're going to do in terms of, you know, providing immunity to disease and so on. I expect problems. So that's why I'm saying bringing up One Health is sort of a, it could provide an excuse to intervene on humans as well as in the animal populations. But just if we start to see more health problems in animals, it's going to give them an excuse to, you know, intervene more generally.
Yeah, I think, Mike, you're really looking, I think your angle is absolutely correct. We need to be suspicious about it. I think the literature out there is already pointing to the directions of an undirecting way of vaccinating people through the animal. So that's a debate that is out there already and is developing every day. I've been following it, not writing about it, but it is clearly a path that we can see shaping up slowly. So I think you're definitely in the right directions as far as these vaccinations. But I also really point out to the technology itself. You know, it's not yet really well understood. Even when Malone talk about it, I think we know he works with the defense ministry and with different kind of some kind of outfits that has to do with defense threats reductions and so on, like DTRA and so on. So we know he has his pals in this business. Whether he knows the technology, you know, how advanced this technology is, and can it survive the transmissions, and how that, you know, this going through the animal channel is going to offer the opportunity maybe to get the rest of the unvaccinated population. Because if you really look at the data today, and I believe we've been lied to, I don't think there's that many people vaccinated fully according to their schedule or the schedule that was imposed. We all have different schedule depending on where we're living. But the bottom line is that there's still a great part of the population in each of our countries that is not vaccinated and extremely well awake. So asking permissions or, you know, the informed consent, all that, it's already has gone through the window, if you will. So they're going to have to come up with another door, and that could be the one.
Now, what do you think about that, Miles?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. What you say about Robert Malone, I share some of those concerns, observations, I guess, that he has, you know, been in the sort of defense machine. So I don't always trust what he's saying, but this information is factual, I believe. It's not really his interpretation or anything. He's just listing out some of the programs that are currently underway when he could find publicly. And to me, it's worrying enough. I mean, one he lists a couple of numbers that in the in the databases for human clinical trials, there's over 50 trials in progress right now, with 200 others registered. Now, with the animal clinical trials, like I said, no database is available. We have to depend on the companies developing them to announce them. But like I said, there's a number of partnerships, programs, initiatives. There's products coming out. With the COVID-19 vax alone, the Pfizer's animal division, which is called Zoetis, I believe that's how you pronounce it, Zoetis, they were giving COVID-19 mRNA vaxes to zoo animals during the pandemic. I don't know if people really heard much about that, but
I heard that they were vaccinating primates, you know, some of like silverback gorillas. And I was horrified to see that, Miles, because I'm like, these are healthy animals. Okay, maybe they're not optimally healthy because they're in a zoo and not running around the jungle in Uganda where they should be. But then to go and jab them with a pharmaceutical, experimental pharmaceutical jab for a healthy gorilla or primate, I just think that's just insane. But this, they're looking at it like there's the financial incentive. So they've managed to monetize human pandemics. Let's just be honest, that's what happened. And weaponize the whole process, which they did. But
yeah, precisely.
But animals, that's an endless market. If you think about it, if you can get people to believe in the zoonotic theory, then pretty much you can spin up a crisis out of thin air nonstop. There's an endless market. It's like 100 years of profit.
Yes, Patrick, one thing perhaps that I could add, and it always kind of stay in the back of my mind, is it's the preempt program with USAID and UC Davis, you know, and the One Health Institutes. And if you look at the contents with the proposal of EcoHealth Alliance with Peter Daszak and Karish and Oliver, all these guys, if you read through the proposal, the diffuse proposal, it's clearly a plan to vaccinate animals, whether it's bats or anything, it doesn't matter. The proposal to DARPA is really about vaccinated this gene or this kind of germ carriers or virus carriers. So there is a definitely from day one a great intentions to work on this kind of DERC research, you know, W's research of concern. And that's exactly what this DARPA proposal from EcoHealth Alliance is representing, and that it obviously include the debate of gain of function. But it's really, when you talk about mRNA, at the end of the day, mRNA without lipid nanoparticle, you've got nothing. It's not going anywhere. It's not dangerous, as it's been promoted. It's extremely fragile. So when I'm talking about mRNA vaccine, we're talking about vaccinated animal. We're already moving towards, you know, what EcoHealth Alliance were doing, you know, just the result of the surveillance that was occurring in Africa, South America, and Southeast Asia. They're gathering the data. And then this is about what Malon is talking about, getting this genome bank, getting this entire data coming, you know, back in under control so that they can literally tag the entire world, whether it's the animal, the plants. And this is all part of the Great Genome Program. You know, we have one in Europe, you guys have one in the United States as well. So they need to complete that phase of really classifying and having this huge database of you know, whether it's a genome, virome, and being able to qualify and quantify that. But the overall idea was always to vaccinate the animal, because the One Health, going back to what you were saying, it's really about the veterinarians coming and joining the human health. And they've been pitching the human health, you know, for a long, long time. It was not accepted. It was very controversial. So going back to the history of One Health is very interesting to see how these people manage, with the help of several actors, to actually been accepted amongst this, the human science. It's a long journey.
And Miles, you've heard of the bird calls? There's massive. I mean, before Christmas, I heard something like in the UK, I don't know how many turkeys got called because of suspected bird flu, avian flu. So, how does that fit into this picture, Miles?
We were talking about bird flu. I mean, probably a year ago, maybe not quite that long, but it was. It came up in our discussions on this show, close to a year ago at least. There were culls then. I didn't really see much about it recently, but I do know that they do cull in the UK, especially when there's suspected outbreaks. They wipe out whole flocks of birds, you know, without even really. I don't know. There's not very little justification in my view, because they're not testing every single bird. They just say, well, one bird in the flock tests positive, which is itself an unreliable PCR test, most likely. They'll cull the whole flock. Yeah. So
this is just a mayhem. This is like Project Mayhem.
The reason I kept bringing up One Health in relation to this, I mean, as I've said, the if we do see negative effects of any of these interventions in the animal populations, that can then, I'm sure they're not going to blame it on the vaccines and the medicines. They're going to blame it on something else, and any headlines to this effect will be filled with, they'll be fear-inducing to humans reading about them, and just make interventions more likely, in my opinion. So,
it makes a lot of sense to me as well. I think there's also a topic that is not to be neglected, is the antimicrobial resistance. It's very AMR is very part of the One Health strategy. You know, if you look back at the first literatures they were putting out since 2004, and then especially when they moved to Europe, when the movement moved to Europe, you can see really that from day one, the animal health and the vaccination, antimicrobial studies, and all that surround the development of vaccines for animals was already planted, because these veterinarians, if you look at the companies like you mentioned, Bayer and all these, they all have a side of the business that is for animal health. You know, they've got the food, there's the animal health, and then there's the human health. And these are big conglomerates, big organizations. So they tap in all these markets. And if it works for the human, they can make billions with the animal, as long as the policies are following. Because don't forget, One Health is really about getting the policy right for these guys to push forward, their medications, or starting to merge literally the medicines in a way that we're losing regulatory control of them. This is really about that. It's taking control of the regulatory and the policies. One Health is a really interesting thing, because it allows to justify the next coup, if you will. We had the COVID as a coup, as a pandemic. It's a coup, right? And then now they can really replicate, because you can apply that. This is part of their strategy, by the way, to apply that to the animals, and then having another coup where we're going to be forced to vaccinate our pets, because pets is very pretty much in the literatures at the moment. Vaccinate pet. Can you imagine how many pets in the world there is, that people will spend money just to vaccinate them? If you can say, well, there is some problem with antimicrobial resistance, or it seems that, there might be a danger, because they've now established that it can go from animal, you know, that zoonotic, you know, going from animal to human.
Or they claim they established.
Well, they claim it, yeah. But let's see,
a lot of it's theoretical, but they're saying the theory is real.
Yeah.
That's the EcoHealth Alliance mantra, is that zoonotic diseases or contagions is the biggest threat biologically to humans. That's their line.
Yes, and it goes way beyond, obviously, EcoHealth Alliance. EcoHealth Alliance is a small player. It has a role to play, you know, but that's much bigger than that. You know, you need to look at the academic level, what the young doctors have been kind of educated with, what kind of material, you know, and they're clearly moving away from the standard science, you know. They're moving away from that. They're rewriting the text because One Health is really the way medicines now is going to be considered. It was not the case 10 years ago. It didn't have that traction, but the governments went on, the academics went on because the money is flowing. So European commissions as program, you know, promoting these academics, university in Europe, in Africa, they go out there, spend money, get One Health desk out there, getting all these young doctors to accept the fundamentals of One Health and include them into their, you know, their therapeutics and the way they look at science.
And the money flows faster when there's a crisis. Then there's no delay to the funding. So there's an incentive to hype up a crisis, to get everybody hysterical and move fast. And don't wait for the clinical trials. Don't wait for the, isn't that what's happened over the last 3 years?
Yeah.
Fast-tracked everything.
It has happened. I mean, the speed, you know, that's what, you know, what's her name, Janet Small was saying, you know, we move at a speed of science. This is exactly what she meant. And she really meant what she was saying. She said, look, it doesn't really matter. We are the science, and that you can hear the United Nations, the World Health Organizations say, we are the science, you know. So you don't get to choose. One Health is going to be the science of the future, whether you like it or not. We're going to teach the young doctors these doctrines, because this is really cultish, is doctrine based. And we know that because when they were fighting, you know, back in the days with the World Bank, just was the catalyzer for One Health. The United Nations, the OIE, and all these guys, they were not having it. They were literally not having it. I said, this is not making sense. This has got to be a joke, right? And, money talks, you know. When you get the World Bank behind you, you move things around.
The funding's available there. Look, I've got Miles of Truth on the line here. I'm with Freddie Ponton, French journalist in studio. Look, we'll take a quick break here with TNT Today's News Talk. I'm Patrick Henningsen, your host. Stick around. We'll be right back after these messages.
De-weaponizing weather with reality and perspective.
So Davos is wrapping up today, which means beware. All those planes are going to be flying out of there, putting more CO2 into the air, and the weather is just about to go crazy all over the place. In fact, the weather is going kind of crazy all over the place, crazy cold. You might think it was wintertime or something. From the Middle East, specifically Iraq and Iran, all the way over to the Far East, it is wickedly cold. That is a huge area that's cold. Western Europe is cold. And we also have the United States getting cold and stormy. What's going on here? Well, it's wintertime. And of course, we've had Al Gore unhinged, John Kerry call himself an extraterrestrial. Apparently losing to Bush causes a problem then. And then there's Greta getting arrested for protesting coal plants in Germany, where it's cold. Well, it's cold in China too. Maybe she should go and protest the coal plants they're building over there. This is TNT Climate and Weather Watchdog meteorologist Joe Bastardi asking you to enjoy the weather. It's the only weather you got.
In times of fear, World Vision is there for the most vulnerable. For the last 70 years, we've been standing with kids and families through natural disasters, war, and disease, delivering life-saving aid and helping rebuild lives. And with every act of courage, faith, and love, we do more than just stop the spread of fear. We replace it with hope. Learn more at worldvision.org.
You're with Patrick Henningsen on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
All right, welcome back. Welcome back, everybody. We're in the final stretch of the first hour here on TNT, Today's News Talk. This is the Patrick Henningsen Show. I'm your host, Patrick Henningsen. Thank you for joining us, and hello to everybody listening on the live stream or globally, and also a special big hello to everybody who's downloaded the TNT Radio app off of the Apple Store or the Google Play Store, and you can download that straight on your cell phone. Pipe that on via Bluetooth connection into your car when you're driving, wherever you are in the world. So everyone loves the app. It's got everything, total accessibility, all the shows, all the episodes, the archive, the whole nine yards. Nobody does it like TNT. You won't find another 24-hour news talk radio resource like this, and the plurality and diversity and variety on the show is second to none, but more importantly, very focused and on a mission, not only to correct some of the injustices of the world, but to get out the truth and to throw down the shackles of censorship, which has plagued mainstream media, but not on this network and not with the hosts that you'll find on this program. Totally accessible TNT Radio app. Get it on your phone right now. Miles of Truth is our research assistant for the show. He's joining us on the live link right now. I've got Freddie Ponton, independent French researcher and journalist, in the house with me in studio. We're on the road doing a little road show on the reportage. And so, Miles, back to you. Your final thoughts on this kind of bigger issue. It's really about this threat of zoonotic transfer from animals to humans. This is the whole basis of so many of these crises, and then also the One Health concept. But I'll kick it back to you for your final thoughts on this.
Yeah, well, during the break, I heard you guys mentioning the foot and mouth disease.
Oh yes,
that's another thing that's a candidate for these treatments. Last year, in 2022, the state of New South Wales in Australia and a company called Teva Biotech teamed up to produce mRNA products for foot and mouth disease.
How do you spell Teva? How do you spell Teva?
T-I-B-A.
T-I-B-A. Okay, that's worth noting, by the way. That sounds like trouble, Miles.
Yeah, so, I mean, there's loads of these things. Swine flu, rotavirus, bovine RSV. There's lots of things they're working on. And you remember on Boiler Room a couple of months ago, they were talking about rabies vaccines being dropped from airplanes.
Yep.
I mean, I don't think that was mRNA, but
Quickly remind people, Miles, if am I mistaken, they dropped little M&M candies that were supposedly for badgers or ferrets to come. They drop them in the forest, and the idea was that the badgers and the ferrets would run and find the candies, which are vaccine mRNA edible vaccines. Is that kind of what it was, Miles?
Yeah, they were fish flavored edible vaccines. I think they were pellets.
Insane.
But they would drop them from airplanes, helicopters, or just out of cars and vans and things. And the idea is that raccoons in particular, when they'd eat them, would then become immune to rabies.
It's insane. This is madness.
That's just one example of these things. There's so many. Mad cow disease. They're working on loads of things. We saw that our good friend Spore pointed us to an article about rabbit hemorrhagic disease, which has now been found in Texas. So there's loads of these, animal viruses and things. I don't think, there's any shortage of that. So whatever vector they want to, pin it to, they can grab. When they find something, they can make work as an idea. I think they're going to run with it. And I do feel like it's been sort of a fishing expedition these past few months with monkeypox. I think that sort of fell flat. But there's loads of other ones they could pull out at any time. But yeah, just on the One Health topic, though. Just to shout out Freddie's work on that, I do think Freddie's work on One Health is probably the authoritative source to go to for information about it up on the 21st Century Wire site. Great work there, Freddie.
Well, thank you so much. That means a lot.
I believe your series was three parts, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's good work there. I really appreciated that.
Very, very interesting research. So not only it was an enjoyable, because not always enjoyable, as you know, sometimes you treat topics that can be a little bit daunting, but this one was really enjoyable, and you can really, really follow the journey of One Health, and that's really what these three articles is about, to take you all the way down to D-Day, you know, when this announcing this pandemic, and to understand the role of One Health and how much it has been extremely important to have it on board. So that's really, I think, a subject that will be revisited over and over, because it will keep on appearing, because it's central to the policies around the world, to all policymakers.
And I want to add on that foot and mouth disease subject. And so I did a film. I worked on a co-production with Malcolm Massey, used to be with the UK Column, back in 2011, 2012. And we went to investigate up to the Pennines, to the Lake District, and those farms, talking to the farmers. So we did a documentary called Slaughtered on Suspicion. It's a good documentary film. But my knowledge at the time was limited. And so the farmer, and Miles, you'll find this very interesting. One of the farmers we spoke to, his big complaint was there was a portable PCR machine from the Parabright Institute via Plum Island in the U.S. Mm-hmm. And they said, if we only had this PCR machine, we could PCR test the livestock rather than slaughter them to see if they had foot and mouth. So their feeling at the time was that the PCR could help save them. But now looking back at that, now I understand what the PCR test really is. It's a way to ramp up tests. It's a way to build up your case numbers rather than exclude. Now I know how it works. Before I just thought it was this great technology that could test if you had a virus or not. And what was amazing about this, and this was the question that came up, and I could never get it answered. And I'm so frustrated that this wasn't the centerpiece of the documentary, but if I was to remake the film, I would ask the question, has foot and mouth disease killed any cattle ever? And the answer is pretty much almost no, that it's like a common cold. I'm saying, why are they slaughtering the animals? And they said, it's hard to get a straight answer on that. They said, because of in some cases, the ulceration on the hoofs, the cloven feet, and on the mouths of the livestock would be very painful and suffering for the animal and could get infected. And so to prevent that possibility, they did a mass cull of millions of livestock in the UK. So it was a compassionate slaughter, but it wasn't a deadly, according to them, it wasn't a deadly virus. It incubated and passed through in 14 to 21 days. It wasn't fatal. So the whole thing was theater. But then you're like, why? Why would you do such a thing if it was of no consequence in the larger scheme of things? It couldn't be passed on to humans. But the way the press was reporting at the time was this idea that it could, like remote possibility. They didn't say it, but they implied it. That this was a dangerous virus that was on the loose, and it means that if we eat meat, we potentially, it could be unhealthy meat. This was that was the general unsaid assumption that I think so much of this is absolute sorcery and hypnosis and fear. And then I'm like, why are they doing it? Who benefited from that? And now I look back and I think that was a dry run.
Exactly.
That's what I think. But Miles, do you have any thoughts? And Freddie, after Miles, we'll wrap up in a couple minutes. But I'll let both of you have the final word on this.
I was just going to say similar thing about bird flu. I don't believe bird flu is necessarily deadly to birds.
It's not. Yeah, you're right. You're right.
So
Miles,
it's a similar kind of thing going on with that now, where they're killing all these birds, but it's not actually, you know, threatening the lives of huge number of these birds. It makes you question, why are they executing huge numbers of birds over a flu?
Yeah, it's a great question, that's for sure. Actually, it reminds me, you remember in Denmark, you know, they culled 17 million mink after coronavirus mutation was found, allegedly, you know. So and when I was reading the papers on that and the various study that was made, it really was the aspect of suspicion. So they didn't need to have any proof. They just needed to have that suspicion enough to say, well, it's a good reason. We don't want to put you at risk. We don't want to put the population at risk. So we believe that this virus mutation could be resistance to a vaccine. And that's really basically the foundations to have people swallowing the idea of variants, where variants are in the thousands in sequence. You know, when you start to work on this material, you know, and you start to mess around with it, you're going to automatically generate and can find, you know, variants everywhere. So they're not lacking of variants, but they need people to believe in that. So that's the first point. And probably the last thing I would say, and I'll definitely look into it even further, but there's an aspect of reproduction, you know. So when we talk about vaccinations, you talk about normally immunity, but in the case of mRNA, you're talking about editing, and you're talking about obviously the body allegedly creating some new material, re-editing this material, the capacity to edit within the cells, and then going into the various organs of the body. So if you want to sell some fake meat, you don't want to have animals, you know, hanging around, you know, big reservoirs of animals that reproduce a lot, that bring that constant flow of, you know, decent meat or whatever. So you're going to want to reduce that population, maybe one or two generations. You know, the targets, these organs, this reproduction, and you'll blame it on some whatever climate change or, you know, displacements or whatever, and you'll be able to say, well, we don't get any more of this carb, you know, we don't get in that. So definitely worth looking into reproduction when you talk about mRNA.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the fake meat industry is I'm very suspicious about this. A big economic incentive, global monopoly, by the way. Yeah. There's going to be two or three companies that do everything, and so it'll be tightly controlled. So I think that's one of the things that's a big red flag on all this, is that industry. So I would say, yes, I agree with you on that. And just a couple minutes left. Miles, you had another topic you wanted to just kind of introduce, but I'll give you the floor. We've got 3 minutes.
Yeah, I think maybe we should hold it over till next time. It's going to take a few minutes to get into it.
Okay, we can do that.
We can just finish up with this. It's fine. I was thinking when Freddie was just mentioning the mink, aren't mink like an endangered species? I thought they were. I wonder how that plays into any of these culls. Do they care?
Well, I think there's the farmed mink industry, and they use mink for different things. But in terms of wild mink, maybe they are endangered. I'm not sure. I'm not familiar with that story on the animal side, but yeah, I don't think that would come into it with these people. I mean, this is just a total utility on this, and 17 million mink on the, so slaughtered on suspicion. That was the title of our film. So that applies to the turkey cull before Christmas. What they do, 12 million birds in the UK, or in, I think they killed them, and the price of turkey shot up. Did you notice that? Price of turkeys went up 100%. I thought that was an interesting byproduct of the slaughter. But it was bird flu. It was like, oh, they might have bird flu, so let's just kill them all. I mean, it's crazy. And the next will be vaccinate them next year. Oh, we got a vaccine. Don't worry. We don't have to kill the birds. We got a vaccine. Mm-hmm. And then what? You know, what's that? Is that and more problems? Maybe in the meat, maybe in the health. I don't know.
There's many strategy, you know, in terms of how you place that in, you know, there's different angles. I think probably one of the angles that is the most interesting is about establishing the intermediate host, you know, as far as really drilling in into the virus moving from the animal reservoir, what is wild or not, doesn't matter. It's really an understanding. And this is what One Health really does. It brings that understanding that we're interacting, that there's a crossover in between the environment, the species, the animals, and we need to look at it as from a complete, you know, kind of a holistic way, if you will. So that's how you get the bigger pictures, and then you can react accordingly. But it's, you need to establish that, you know, it's still very new. You know, you still have a lot of people that can actually come back at you, and it's quite easy to destroy. So they need to establish in the mind it's a cell. So that's an angle as well. Intermediate host, they've pushed it a lot at the beginning of coronavirus. We heard all sort of animals, you know, involving.
So bats to the pangolin was the intermediate, right?
Exactly.
Or the
the camel as well.
The camel,
so,
yeah.
And mares. The fox. And then there you go. So he goes from a bat, then you go to a camel or to a fox or to a civet. Then he'll eventually.
Civets, yeah, that one.
Must be a very tired virus, you know, because by the time he gets.
Jumping all over the place. Look, we'll talk about that after the break. Maybe we'll pick up on this again. But thank you, Miles of Truth, for joining us this week on TNT.
My pleasure, guys. Great to be with you. Thank you.
A lot to think about, folks. A lot to think about. These are big stories. They're important stories. We'll continue to deconstruct and unpack them. In the meantime, let's take a break. Top of the hour news headlines with TNT, Today's News Talk. I'm Patrick Henningsen, your host. We will be right back in just a few minutes.